It's never easy to reconcile, and sometimes it's even more difficult to reconcile with family. But Skip Heitzig says there's a very important reason we need to.
You've been forgiven by Jesus Christ. God's given you his unconditional love. Don't you think the people who have received unconditional love should give unconditional love? In fact, don't you think the only ones equipped to show unconditional love are those who've received unconditional love? You're a Christian. You have a different standard. You have a different power. You could go and make it right.
Make the connection at the foot of the cross. Study the Word of God and find the way into His love. And take the time to read, for Jesus took the time.
Family has come a long way in just over 50 years. It's gone from Father Knows Best and Leave It to Beaver to Family Guy, which is a show about a guy who's anything but a family guy. The result has been broken families, shattered relationships, and more social problems among young adults and teens than ever before. Is the Bible still relevant for today's family? Is there anything we can do to swim against the tide of anti-family sentiment? Well, Skip Heitzig answers those questions today here on The Connection. But first, I just wanted to remind you that if you ever want to listen to past teachings from Skip or review some of our older teaching series, you can find them at our website. Just visit connectionradio.org/library to access over 1,200 messages from Skip. You can stream and listen for free, so check it out at connectionradio.org/library. So what can be done to preserve the family? And how can a strong, godly family influence society? You may be surprised just how important it really is. Stay with us to learn more.
And make the connection at the foot of the cross. And study the Word of God and find the way into His love. Make the connection.
If you'll open your Bibles to 2 Samuel chapter 13, we'll join Skip Heitzig as he continues this study on the importance of the family.
Over the last 30 years, if you went from 1978 up to today and looked at the 30-year trend, we noticed that there is a rise in violent crime among the young that corresponds with a rise in families abandoned by fathers. There's a lot of stats on that. Teenage aggression and hostility mirrors the growth of single-parent families. And they've done the research, and we have the numbers. The states in the United States that have the most of such families is first on the list, Mississippi, 48%. Second, Louisiana, 45%. Third in America, New Mexico, 37%. See, this isn't theory. This is our reality. This is happening next door or in our own homes. That is the state of our affairs. Well, not only does this young man get violent and kill his stepbrother and run away, but if you look at chapter 15, the violence turns into subversion, gets worse. His behavior is even more erratic. In chapter 15, Solomon, back in Jerusalem, takes 50 guys with him, goes out to the gate of the city, and as people come into the city, well, watch what happens, verse 3. Absalom would say to him, "Look, your case is good and right, but there is no deputy of the king to hear you." Moreover, Absalom would say, "Oh, that I were made judge in the land, and everyone who has any suit or cause would come to me, then I would give him justice." He's a perfect politician, this kid. And so it was, whenever anyone came out to bow down to him, that he would put out his hand and take him and kiss him. He knows how to campaign, this guy. In this manner, Absalom acted toward all Israel who came to the king for judgment. Now watch this. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. What's happening here? You say, well, it's a guy starting a coup. What's really happening here? You have a young man trying to get his dad's attention. Really trying to get his dad's attention. Here's what I want you not to miss. The whole stability of the nation rests upon a single relationship of a father and a son. And it's about to split. Well, let's move now to King David, just for just a moment. A remorseful dad. We'll close on this. A remorseful dad. What I want you to see, and really this is the heart of the message, there's two principal reasons for the dysfunction in the family of David. If you don't like the word dysfunction because you think it's psychobabble, use another word, malfunction. Better? Disarray. A breakdown. Two principal reasons for it. Number one, proximity without intimacy. Proximity without intimacy. That's where you're close, but you're not close. You're in the same town, you're in the same house, you're close physically, but you are detached emotionally. Proximity without intimacy. Well, here's the deal. We read in chapter 13 that Absalom fled. He was gone 3 years. Joab, the general who was David's buddy, knew that King David, this was eating him up. It was eating him up. He knew that he wanted to see Absalom, his son, but he wouldn't swallow his pride and go get him. So he figures out a way to bring Absalom back to town, begs David. David says, okay, bring him. So verse 23 of chapter 14, notice. So Joab arose and went to Geshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. That sounds good, right? And the king said, let him return to his own house, but do not let him see my face. Ouch. So Absalom returned to his own house, but did not see the king's face. Verse 28, Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem, but did not see the king's face. That's proximity without intimacy. There's no way to heal unless you see, talk, read the body language, confess. Don't let him see my face. So watch what happens. That turns into resentment. Watch. Therefore, Absalom sent for Joab to send him to the king, but he would not come to him. And when he sent him again the second time, he would not come. So he said to his servants, see, Joab's field is near mine. He has barley there. Go set it on fire. And Absalom's servants set the field on fire. And Joab arose and came to Absalom's house and said to him, why have your servants set my field on fire? Absalom answered Joab, look, I sent you saying, come here so that I may send you to the king to say, why have I come from Geshur? It would be better for me to be there still. Now, therefore, let me see the king's face. But if there is iniquity in me, then let him execute me. I'd rather die than live like this. Just as David longed to see Absalom, Absalom longs to see David. David says, I don't want to see him. Bring him to town, but I don't want to see him. That's how he dealt with things. Proximity without intimacy. 2 years of that makes for 2 years of resentment. Back in the 1800s, the 19th century, there was a pretty notable, busy politician by the name of Charles Francis Adams. Bigwig, important, powerful. He kept a journal. One day, there was this entry written in his journal. It said, went fishing with my son today, a day wasted. Now, his son also kept a journal. And on the very same day, he entered in his journal, went fishing with my dad today, the most wonderful day of my life. That's proximity without intimacy. Here's a boy who couldn't wait to be with his dad. There's a dad saying, I have to do this. A wasted day in the same boat, but not in the same boat. Not on the same page. Dads, it's much easier to build a boy than it is to repair a man. And you're about to read about a broken relationship that never gets repaired. And how do you build a boy? How do you build a girl? You sow into their life, your life. You sow time. You share the intimacy that comes with the proximity. Gallup poll put out a youth survey of 1,000 teenagers, and out of 1,000 teens, 42% of them had not received words of praise during the 24-hour period tested. Half of them got no hug or no kiss, and 44% never heard the words, "I love you." Well, they don't need to hear it. I told them. I tell them enough. Tell them every day. Tell them several times a day. Talk to them on the phone. "I love you." You can't hear that enough. We need to be buttressed, built up, fortified in that love. So there was proximity without intimacy, and that was the first cause of this dysfunction. There was something else. There was dissension without resolution. Dissension without resolution. There's been this long time rift between David and Solomon that has never been resolved. Never been resolved. So Absalom kills and sets Fields on fire, and chapter 15 starts a coup. Get his dad's attention. Now, what happens? Historically, we know. He was successful in his subversion. He managed to split the nation. He inaugurates himself as the king in chapter 15, 16, 17, and 18. Reveal that story. So now you have King Absalom with a whole group of people for him and against the king, and he manages to kick King David out of Jerusalem. David has to flee like a refugee. So as the chapters go on, now there's two armies. Now get this, there's the army of King David and the army of King Solomon. The armies. And the armies of King David and the armies of King, Absalom are fighting each other. See, this is a family feud on steroids. Their armies are fighting each other. Okay, look at chapter 18. David's army is about to face Absalom in battle. Here's the briefing before the battle. One verse, verse 5. Now the king, chapter 18, verse 5. Now the king had commanded Joab, Abishai, and Ittai, the three generals, saying, "Deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom." You won't talk to him. Won't resolve conflict. Deal gently with him. And all the people heard when the king gave all the captains orders concerning Absalom. What's David thinking about? His son. Well, the battle goes on. Absalom gets killed in the battle. A runner comes back to give the news that David and his army has won the war. Verse 28, so Ahimaaz called out and said to the king, "All is well." And he bowed down his face to the earth before the king, and he said, "Blessed be the Lord your God, who has delivered up the men who raised their hand against my lord the king." Now, most kings would rejoice at that news. But watch this. The king said, one question, one concern. Is the young man Absalom safe? What was this king thinking about during this war? His son. He wasn't thinking about how the battle's going to go. He wasn't thinking about, "I hope I get to Jerusalem by the end of the month. Hope I get my throne back." One thing's on his mind, his son. And some sons or daughters here this morning, you think about your dad or even your mom, you might say, "My dad doesn't care about me. My dad never thinks about me." He's thinking about you right now. "Why didn't he ever call me? Why didn't David ever go to Absalom for 3 years? He was the king. Why didn't he do it?" I don't know why. I don't know what weirdness is set up in the family of yours that has caused somebody to get entrenched. But I'm going to say this. If you're a mom or a dad and there's a rift, leave this place today and do whatever it takes to reach out. Just try to reach out. Do your part to reach out and heal the rift. Or if you're a son or a daughter and you've been hurt by your parents, don't you sit there after this message and say, "Well, I'm just going to wait for them to call." You call. You tell them you love them. Me? They blew it. Yeah, but last time I checked, that verse about honoring your father and your mother is still in the book. It's still there. Well, they're the ones that blew it. Okay, think of it this way. You've been forgiven by Jesus Christ. God's given you his unconditional love. Don't you think the people who have received unconditional love should give unconditional love? In fact, don't you think the only ones equipped to show unconditional love are those who've received unconditional love? You're a Christian. You have a different standard. You have a different power. You could go and make it right. Well, we close with verse 33. The king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate, and he wept. And as he went, he said thus, "Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I had died in your place. Oh, Absalom, my son." That's too little, too late. What grief. These are the very words he should have said to Absalom 2 years while Absalom was in Jerusalem, or 3 years when he was in Geshur and had the opportunity because he longed to go see him. Can't now. He's dead. It's over. I've seen this replayed so many times in emergency rooms of hospitals. And you know what? For me, this isn't just a Bible verse or a statistic. I watched this in my own family. I had a father who was very aloof, very proud, and I had a brother who had a rift with my dad, and it was a long-standing rift, and neither of them would budge. In fact, I even watched them have a fist fight in our own home. That's traumatic to a young teenager to watch that. I watched it, and I watched the rift grow worse and worse until the night my father called me on the phone, and I'd never heard that in anybody's voice. He announced, "Your brother's been killed in a motorcycle accident." And all of us were grieved. All of us were torn up by it. But it crippled my father. For the rest of his life, emotionally, everything was filtered through that failure. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son. Now, about now, you're thinking, great, to come to church to get depressed. Kind of a sermon is this? I'm going to have roast preacher for lunch. Well, I wanted to sort of frame the problem so we can talk about the solution next week and the week after. But here's what I want to end with. There's a great principle that is perfect right about now. It's in Isaiah chapter 59. Right around verse 16. It says, "When the enemy comes in like a flood, the Spirit of the Lord will raise up a standard against him." And there are ways to secure your families, your relationships, the next generation. Number one is communication. Learn to communicate as a family. There's a lot of opportunities, a lot of help. You'll find a lot of resources around you to help you do that. Because how you communicate, parents, with your children, you're setting up the imprint for them to communicate with their children and grandchildren. They're just going to copy and do what you do. Number two, humble yourself. Get them together and begin with these sentences. "I'm sorry for," not, "I have a few things I want to point out about you." No, "I'm sorry for. Forgive me for." Try that. Try that. Again, what you're setting up for them is the ability for humility in their future. I want you to think outside the box as we close, because we're thinking about our own families. And I guess we should be, but you know, all those millions of children that are street kids, what about them? How about this? How about mentorship? How about big brother, big sister programs? How about even adoption? You know, there are these kids that are abandoned, but if they could be brought into a Christian home, or if somebody once a week could become a mentor, or a big brother, or big sister, you know what the stats prove? All the stats are bad. You know, the stats get good if there's a mentor or a big brother. You know, the crime goes down absenteeism at school goes down, drug usage goes down, if just for a period of time, a kid interacts with a loving, positive big brother, big sister. So, there's no perfect parents. There's no perfect families. There's no perfect homes. But you can have and should have a secure home. I want you to listen to this. I am really closing with this. This girl writes, "My dad says I'm enormously gorgeous." Isn't that a great phrase? I wonder if I really am. To be enormously gorgeous, Sarah says, you need to have beautiful, long, curly hair like she has. I don't. To be enormously gorgeous, Justin says, you must have perfectly straight white teeth like he has. I don't. To be enormously gorgeous, Jessica says, you can't have any of those little brown dots on your face called freckles. I do. To be enormously gorgeous, Mark says, you have to be the smartest kid in the seventh grade class. I'm not. To be enormously gorgeous, Stephen says, you have to be able to tell the funniest jokes in the school. I don't. To be enormously gorgeous, Lauren says, you need to live in the nicest neighborhood in town and in the prettiest house. And I don't. To be enormously gorgeous, Matthew says, you can only wear the coolest clothes and the most popular shoes. I don't. To be enormously gorgeous, Samantha says, you need to come from a perfect family. And I don't. But every night at bedtime, my dad gives me a big hug and says, you are enormously gorgeous and I love you. My dad must know something my friends don't. I hope that you know something nobody else knows. Those kids wake you up at 1 and then 3 and then 4 and 5. They're all gifts. They're all gifts. And they don't have the equipment to deal with life like you have the ability to deal with it. And so the choice is ours. Not to be perfect. Not to be flawless. Not to never make mistakes. Not that at all. In fact, not even to fix problems. But to try to do your part to communicate, to humble yourself, and to help shape those precious gifts.
The family has never been more important for future generations than it is right now. You can make an eternal difference in the lives of those entrusted to your home. It's a great, wonderful, and often challenging privilege. But as we know, all things are possible with God. And it's with that thought that we're going to have to wrap things up for today. But first, we've talked about whether or not the family is still relevant, but what about the church? Is there still a need for that? Well, here's how you can find out.
Why should we bother going to church? It takes so much time, and there's lots of other things that need to get done on the weekends. Plus, you can find lots of great Bible teaching to listen to on the web. Mix in a little worship music from your favorite band. It's just like going to church, isn't it? So why bother actually going to a church building? The answers to those questions, plus reasons why the church is still relevant in today's society, are revealed by Skip Heitzig in his new book, Church, Who Needs It?
It's the place where God's people gather, so we're accountable. It's the place where God's principles are given, so we can grow. It's the place where God's purpose for our life is uncovered. And it's the place where God's presence is found in a very unique way.
Church, Who Needs It? By Skip Heitzig. Get your copy this month from The Connection for a special price of just $10 when you call 1-800-922-1888 or when you visit connectionradio.org.
And when you contact us for a copy of Skip's book, you can also ask for a copy of today's teaching on CD. It's available for just $6 when you call 1-800-922-1888 or when you visit connectionradio.org. And finally, we wanted to remind you that it's your support that makes it possible for us to bring you these teachings each day. So if you can give any amount above that suggested donation, it would be a big blessing. Give us a call at 1-800-922-1888. 1888 or learn more when you visit connectionradio.org.
And make the connection.
What is the domino effect, and why should we be worried about it? We'll find out next time here on The Connection, a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.